This is The Book in the Spade, a report on the latest discoveries and developments in biblical archaeology. Here's your host, Gordon Govier.
If you want to get technical about it, biblical archaeology ends during the first century after the birth of Christ. But what follows, especially during the 4th to 7th centuries, is a unique Christian period in the Holy Land. It's called the Roman Byzantine period. The archaeology of the Byzantine Holy Land includes a unique art form that flourished at that time, beautiful mosaics. Among the most beautiful that's been recovered is the Mona Lisa of the Galilee at Sepphoris. Dennis Groh, who taught the history of Christianity at Garrett Seminary for 28 years, worked at Sepphoris at the time I interviewed him in 1996.
You know, there's been a tendency to portray the 4th through the 7th centuries as a time of declining prosperity. It's not. It's a boom time in the East. People had mosaics in their homes. And they covered their synagogues with mosaics, especially in the 5th centuries on. And mosaics are expensive. They come in cheaper, white, not so finely done things, and they go all the way up to the Mona Lisa of Israel found at Sepphoris. Very, very expensive. Or the beautiful carpet mosaic of the Zodiac and the Ark at Hamath Tiberias, just south of the modern city of Tiberias. Folks have found an art form they're willing to ante up for, and a way of permanently detailing their faith, their language, and debates are still going, but maybe even for Jews, the calendar, the proper calendar of when to celebrate the festivals. In 425, around 425, the Patriarchate ends. That chief Jewish ruling officer that rules Jews in the Holy Land. And that, I think, accelerated the trend a bit toward making the Judaism of Israel a little more local in their concerns. But the vibrancy and money and things like that just continues in this huge explosion of synagogue building.
Well, we've talked already about the monasteries that proliferated in the Judean desert. In addition, there were churches seemed to be sprouting up everywhere. We've talked with Mordecai Aviam about the churches he's found in the Western Galilee, all over the place, previously unknown. You've excavated in the northern Negev. At Nitzana, for instance, there were a number of different churches. In Jerash, in Jordan, there are a number of Christian churches. And I suppose the question is, why were there so many different churches before there were so many denominations?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think probably we'll find places with multiple churches. Nitzana with at least five, you know, these concentrations in Jordan, which are stunning, serve slightly different populaces. I mean, some of these churches are connected with monastic communities, for example. They're chapels and churches. But they're primarily, they proliferate in border areas. Because we'll have to remember that Christianity carries now, by the 5th and 6th centuries, not only salvific notions, but civilizing notions. This is the religion of the Byzantine Empire. The desert peoples that are coming in, Arabic-speaking peoples, are, we now know, converting to Christianity. Now, it can be well argued these are gold conversions. The chieftains are paid, as they are, for example, we think, in the northeastern Golan Heights, where you have old Nabataean stock supplemented by Arab stock, that they are maybe being paid to convert. But the Bedouin are converting, and they're converting to Christianity, and some of these, the size of these churches may be explainable by that fact.
Well, we've already talked about how the Jews and Christians interacted and to some degree kept to themselves and their own communities. They can't really help influencing each other when they coexist and their religions are flourishing in such a positive way.
One very concrete thing we now know, or I now know, I don't know if anybody else agrees with me, but I published a long article last year on the stratigraphic chronology of the Galilean synagogue. It seems very clear to me that Jews were worshiping in basilicas 50 years before Christians were using the basilica form to work in. So the long debate about where does the Christian church come from, does it come from the civil basilica or the religious basilica or the king's house or the street, what's the form that provided it? Well, we, in Palestine, we can say, well, there were the Jewish synagogues, Meron in the Galilee, Gush Halav, Ein Nabertein. There were Jews worshiping in basilical buildings, these column-tall, long buildings. When Constantine begins to build Christian churches in the Holy Land, and Christians began building their structures. Certainly, it has to have an influence from the Jewish community. That in itself is interesting because it points to the new importance of religious buildings in this late antiquity. Everybody's got them. Everybody's got to have them. They've got to be pretty classy. You know, we're hard-pressed to find earlier synagogues. They're not so much. They're little assembly halls. But these great synagogues of Byzantine Jewry are really something. You know, if you've toured the Holy Land at all, you've seen them at Hama, Tiberias, or Beit Alpha, or a whole series of places. Meroth in Upper Galilee, just recently excavated about 5 years ago. So that's one thing. Everybody's got to have a fancy structure. And people are anting up their spare money to build these. Most of the donations of the corpus of donors of synagogues are from private individuals. And the same for the Christians. It's not state money. It's not imperial money in this. Lots of love lavished structurally on one's religions. Secondly, the Jews in their synagogue life or in their religious life of the 4th through the 7th centuries are quite different than earlier generations of Jews. It's not just that the temple is missing. It's that the reverence for Scripture has increased. In synagogue after synagogue, about the middle of the 4th century, we see the Bema, or place from which Scripture is read, raised in height. And with that, very often, as at Meron in the Upper Galilee, Hama Tiberias in the Lower Galilee, a room which is probably the room in which Scripture is kept, well decorated, things like that. There's a reverence now for Holy Scripture and reading. And the second thing we know is that Jews in the Byzantine period develop personal piety that seems not to be there, or at least we can't find it in earlier centuries. What do I mean by that? Our assumption is that Jews went to the synagogue to pray. What we learn from the New Testament is that Jews went to read Scripture and hear it exposited. Did they pray? Yes, we have the prayers. But they were set prayers, like the benedictions. The synagogue seems not to be the place where the Jew carried on personal prayer. It was done at home, if it was done. It was part of the family ceremonials, not the public life. Now, Dan Orman has recently published an article in a two-volume book on the synagogue that he's edited, where my stratigraphic chronology also appears, arguing very convincingly that the first clean, clear textual notices of Jews praying personally in the synagogue comes in the 4th century. So where did this come from? This new veneration of Scripture and Torah as Scripture, as a scroll, as a thing, and this new personal piety. We think it's in the face of the piety of Byzantine Christians. If the Jews could lend the church their structures, the Christians could show the Jews a new style of personal piety, which we associate more with the Hellenic or the early Christian world than we do with Judaism, which came from a more communal and set kind of public worship.
For those who have just joined us, we're talking with Dennis Groh, a professor at Garrett Evangelical Divinity School in Evanston, Illinois, wrapping up the end of our discussion about the Byzantine period. Students of history know that the Byzantine period in the Holy Land ended with the conquest by the new religionists, the Islamic peoples who moved in. What else can you tell us about this period that we have gained from archaeology?
Well, one of the things this generation of scholars has discovered from the countless surveys and excavations that have been carried on across the country has been that the end of Judeo-Christian Palestine and the beginning of Islamic Palestine really begins to resemble the foundings of the nation. That is, we used to talk about conquests, which destroyed whole sites. And now we're seeing this more as transitions. So when the Islamic faithful appear out of the deserts and enter Palestine, they bring with them not so much a change of everything and a deep destructiveness as a change of rulership. We did a synagogue in the north, Ain Nabratain. Is there a Muslim conquest there? No. There's a transition. The last synagogue floor was put in around 700 AD with coins minted in Damascus in the floor, gold coins. So we can date the floor very well. Ain Nabratain ended as a site because it trailed off. It wasn't destroyed. Capernaum went on into the 7th century. We know from the Israeli explanation. It sort of trailed off. Nisana in the northern Negev, in those cities, we know from the papyri and the archaeology, trailed off. Now, in the second part of the 6th century, Constantinople canceled the money it paid to defend the frontiers. They disbanded those frontier armies. Meant they also lowered taxes. So there was an explosion of money in the local areas, and we see quite a lot of building of synagogues, churches, villages right in this time horizon. But we also see the already settlement of Arabic peoples and new people settling in. So there's a kind of long transition period. And we find out that about the only thing that really changed, now cities like Caesarea were destroyed. Holdout cities, any army knows how to take care of. But most of the country, the transition was peaceful. The only real consequence we can tell from the Nisana papyri is taxes went up under the Muslims. So there is a decline that sets in the 700s. Because one of the truly remarkable things in the history of the Holy Land has happened. We used to say Alexander the Great was the first to bring great Western influence to Israel when he conquered it. We now know from the work that was done on the Persian period that the 6th century, we haven't found a 6th century site yet without Greek pottery in it. So from the 6th century BC to the 7th century AD, Israel faced and traded west. When the Islamic rule comes in, the trade routes run now to Damascus and to the east. So in mid-7th century Israel, when you got up, Christians face east to pray. Jews sometimes face east in Orient. But the whole country, trade-wise, the whole country is facing east for the first time in 1,000 years. And the medieval world of Israel and of ancient Palestine is going to be a world geared into the Eastern Levant, not into Western Christianity. An absolutely signal change. We're seeing a millennia of direction change. When we get up in the 7th century, we don't look toward Greece or Rome. We face east.
And continued to face east for hundreds of years until the Crusaders arrived. But that's another story. So many different interesting periods of history in the Holy Land. Dennis Groh taught the history of Christianity at Garrett Seminary for 28 years, and we talked to him near the end of his time there in 1996. Dennis Groh was participating in excavations at Sepphoris at that time. He participated in numerous other excavations in Israel and elsewhere. He passed away in April earlier this year. He was 83 years old. One of the best ways to keep up to date on the latest discoveries and developments in biblical archaeology is through our quarterly Biblical Archaeology News magazine, Artifacts. You can find out how to subscribe at radioscribe.com. We also have information there on our next Israel tour, where we visit the sites we talk about, where these discoveries are being made. And we also have breaking news videos from the Israel Antiquities Authority at our website, radioscribe.com. I'm Gordon Govier. Join us again next time for more Backgrounders on the Bible through Biblical Archaeology on The Book and the Spade.
The Book and the Spade is produced by Scribe Media. For information on biblical archaeology resources or obtaining a copy of this program on CD, go to our website at radioscribe.com.